Okay, so continuing on the chapter of practices and perspectives, a section of it has been about the natural path. Yesterday was mostly the Mahajatari Sakasutta, and the Great 40, outlining the Eightfold Path plus the where it goes into the Tenfold Path. And the next quote in this same section on the natural path is from Anguttara 10, Sutta number 2. It is natural that in a virtuous person, one of consummate virtue, freedom from remorse will arise. It is natural that in a person free from remorse, gladness will arise. It is natural that in a glad person, rapture will arise. It is natural that for an enraptured person, the body will be calmed. It is natural that a person of calm body will feel pleasure. It is natural that the mind of a person feeling pleasure will become concentrated. It is natural that a person whose mind is concentrated will see things as they actually are. It is natural that a person seeing things as they actually are will grow disenchanted and dispassionate. It is natural that a disenchanted and dispassionate person will realize the knowledge and vision of release. So that's we're not quite sure where that translation came from, because we're working on the book for many years, and it was printed, I don't know, over 15 years ago or something. To me, it's a really important sequence of natural phenomena that we should be trying to pay attention to and foster or allow or facilitate. There's a monk formerly from Abhayagiri, Ajahn Kovilo, who has written a book. Because he'd heard me talk about this so many times, he actually started paying attention to it. And then he pulled together all of the places in the canon where the Buddha used this sequence. And he made a little booklet called the Well-Being Cascade, or Cascade of Well-Being, something like that. And it's also interesting that in this particular sutta, Anguttara 10, Sutta number 2, it's going through this sequence of conditions, causes and conditions. It's natural that the mind of a person feeling pleasure will become concentrated. That's one who experiences sukha will experience samadhi. And there are some of the suttas that the Buddha is giving this sequence, and he actually stops and really emphasizes the happy mind is easily concentrated or is easily settles into samadhi. And I think it's just so important for us as practitioners to recollect that or reflect on it or consider it, because we tend to work from the paradigm, if I only had my samadhi together, I'd be happy. Whereas the Buddha is working from a completely different paradigm. If you had your happiness together, then you'd experience samadhi. So it's a good transition to try to consider. But I thought to read from a much newer translation of Bhikkhu Bodhi's, because he uses some slightly different terms, and also this is the full sutta. Anguttara 10, Sutta number 2. Bhikkhus, for a virtuous person, one whose behavior is virtuous, no volition need be exerted. Let non-regret arise in me. It is natural that non-regret arises in a virtuous person, one whose behavior is virtuous. For one without regret, no volition need be exerted. Let joy arise in me. It is natural that joy arises in one without regret. For one who is joyful, no volition need be exerted. Let rapture arise in me. It is natural that rapture arises in one who is joyful. For one with a rapturous mind, no volition need be exerted. Let my body be tranquil. It is natural that the body of one with a rapturous mind is tranquil. For one tranquil in body, No volition need be exerted. Let me feel pleasure. It is natural that one tranquil in body feels pleasure. For one feeling pleasure, no volition need be exerted. Let my mind be concentrated. It is natural that the mind of one feeling pleasure is concentrated. For one who is concentrated, no volition need be exerted. Let me know and see things as they really are. It is natural that one who is concentrated knows and sees things as they really are. For one who knows things as they really are, no volition need be exerted. Let me be disenchanted and dispassionate. It is natural that one who knows and sees things as they really are is disenchanted and dispassionate. For one who is disenchanted and dispassionate, no volition need be exerted. Let me realize the knowledge and vision of liberation. It is natural that one who is disenchanted and dispassionate realizes the knowledge and vision of liberation. Thus, bhikkhus, the knowledge and vision of liberation is the purpose and benefit of disenchantment and dispassion. Disenchantment and dispassion are the purpose and benefit of the knowledge and vision of things as they really are. The knowledge and vision of things as they really are is the purpose and benefit of concentration. Concentration is the purpose and benefit of pleasure. Pleasure is the purpose and benefit of tranquility. Tranquility is the purpose and benefit of rapture. Rapture is the purpose and benefit of joy. Joy is the purpose and benefit of non-regret. And non-regret is the purpose and benefit of virtuous behavior. Thus, bhikkhus, one stage flows into the next stage, one stage fills up the next stage, for going from the near shore to the far shore. Any questions? Yeah.
At least to me, some of those links seem a whole lot more natural than others, particularly the one between samadhi and knowledge and vision of the way things are. For instance, the bodhisattva was really good at concentration, but he wouldn't have described himself as having knowledge and vision of things as they are back when he was studying with Alara Kalama.
Yeah, that's the whole purpose of right view. That's why this whole path is important. You can't just sort of isolate one thing and think that you'll get the whole picture. Like yesterday's sutta is really an important piece. So you have to see these different teachings that the Buddha gives, seeing them kind of lining up as kind of what is the overall picture, like a kaleidoscope, finally sort of coming to some sort of point or clarity. So that it's true. That is an essential piece of knowledge and vision of things as they truly are. Because without that concentration or the stability of mind or the steadiness of mind, then one does not see things as they truly are. Yeah?
Yes, Rupo. You mentioned one of those connections or steps was pleasure.
Yeah.
Is the equivalent in the Pali?
Is sukha. It starts with virtue, sila, of course. What arises from sila is that freedom from remorse. Can't remember what the Pali is for freedom from remorse. With freedom from remorse as the condition, then gladness arises. Gladness in Pali is pamoja. P-A-M-O-J-J-A. Pamoja. And it's a pramod. Pamoja comes up again in the Anapanasati Sutta. Gladdening the mind I breathe in, gladdening the mind I breathe out. So it's a pamodayam. So the next link is rapture, bhiti, and then after rapture, the body will be calmed. That is pasati, and P-A-S-S-A-D-D-H-I. And then the calmed body will feel pleasure, is sukha. And then samadhi arising out of the sukha. Then out of samadhi is the arising of yathabhuta jnana dasana, knowledge and vision of things as they truly are. Yes?
I had a question about, so knowledge and vision, is that a different knowledge and vision than like the Dhammacakkappavattana where it says vision and knowledge arose and things unheard of before?
Yes and no. Similar, definitely in the ballpark. Because sometimes you get knowledge and vision of Yathabhuta, like Jnana Dasana, knowledge and vision, and seeing things as they truly are. It doesn't necessarily imply penetration through the Four Noble Truths, but it's absolutely a part, a constituent. So it's sometimes yes, sometimes no. Yeah.
Does that mean that sadness and misery is by nature a state of delusion and not seeing things as they truly are?
Oh, absolutely. Dukkha is an unnecessary part of not seeing things clearly. Yes.
Is having a virtuous life, is it an integral part of having a sense of purpose and living with the right livelihood?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. That. Because that sense of sila, I mean, sometimes these days, because you're always trying to find language that captures. You know, virtue sometimes has a kind of like a goody-two-shoes feeling to it in English. Like virtue and integrity. That sense of integrity is so integral to living a really meaningful life. Okay. So the next quote that I have in this natural path is from the Anapanasati Sutta, Majjhima 118. Bhikkhus, when mindfulness of breathing is developed and cultivated, it is of great fruit and great benefit. When mindfulness of breathing is developed and cultivated, it fulfills the four foundations of mindfulness. When the four foundations of mindfulness are developed and cultivated, they fulfill the seven enlightenment factors. When the seven enlightenment factors are developed and cultivated, they fulfill true knowledge and deliverance. So again, just illustrating the, I mean, one is a natural progression of qualities that are cultivated and they're resultant and they get built on. But also, you know, it's not so natural that you don't have to put some effort in. So then, yeah, there's that mindfulness of breathing, four foundations of mindfulness, seven factors of awakening. Yeah. Putting those into practice and living them. And you find that then the path really progresses from those causes and conditions that we put into place. There's another sutta that I wanted to read. That's the end of the section in the book called A Natural Path. But then there's a sutta that I wanted to read that illustrates it quite well, and it's one of my favorite suttas, and I have no idea why I didn't put it into the book. When you're doing stuff like a book, some things quite literally fall off the page. This is Anguttara 10, sutta number 69. Bhikkhus, this is said, a first point of ignorance, bhikkhus, is not seeing such that before this there was no ignorance and afterward it came into being. Still, ignorance is seen to have a specific condition. I say, bhikkhus, that ignorance has a nutriment. It is not without nutriment. And what is the nutriment for ignorance? It should be said, the five hindrances. The five hindrances too, I say, have a nutriment. They are not without nutriment. And what is the nutriment for the five hindrances? It should be said, the three kinds of misconduct. The three kinds of misconduct too, I say, have a nutriment. They are not without nutriment. And what is the nutriment for the three kinds of misconduct? It should be said, non-restraint of the sense faculties. Non-restraint of the sense faculties, too, I say, has a nutriment. it is not without nutriment. And what is the nutriment for non-restraint of the sense faculties? It should be said, lack of mindfulness and clear comprehension. Lack of mindfulness and clear comprehension, too, I say, has a nutriment. It is not without nutriment. And what is the nutriment for lack of mindfulness and clear comprehension? It should be said, careless attention. Careless attention, too, I say, has a nutriment. It is not without nutriment. And what is a nutriment for careless attention? It should be said, lack of faith. Lack of faith, too, I say, has a nutriment. It is not without nutriment. And what is the nutriment for lack of faith? It should be said, not hearing the good Dhamma. Not hearing the good Dhamma, too, I say, has a nutriment. It is not without nutriment. And what is the nutriment for not hearing the good Dhamma? It should be said, not associating with good persons. Thus, not associating with good persons, becoming full, fills up not hearing the good Dhamma. Not hearing the good Dhamma, becoming full, fills up lack of faith. Lack of faith, becoming full, fills up careless attention. Careless attention, becoming full, fills up lack of mindfulness and clear comprehension. Lack of mindfulness and clear comprehension, becoming full, fills up non-restraint of the sense faculties. Non-restraint of the sense faculties, becoming full, fills up the three kinds of misconduct. The three kinds of misconduct, becoming full, fill up the five hindrances. The five hindrances, becoming full, fill up ignorance. Thus there is nutriment for ignorance, and in this way it becomes full. Just as when it is raining and the rain pours down in thick droplets on a mountaintop, the water flows down along the slope and fills the clefts, gullies, and creeks. These, becoming full, fill up the pools. These, becoming full, fill up the lakes. These, becoming full, fill up the streams. These, becoming full, fill up the rivers. And these, becoming full, fill up the great ocean. Thus there is nutriment for the great ocean, and in this way it becomes full. So too, not associating with good persons, becoming full fills up not hearing the good Dhamma, and so on. Thus there is the nutriment for ignorance, and this way it becomes full. I say, bhikkhus, that true knowledge and liberation have a nutriment. They are not without nutriment. And what is nutriment for true knowledge and liberation? It should be said, the seven factors of enlightenment. The seven factors of enlightenment, too, I say, have a nutriment. They are not without nutriment. And what is nutriment for the seven factors of enlightenment? It should be said, the four establishments of mindfulness. The four establishments of mindfulness, too, I say, have a nutriment. They are not without nutriment. And what is the nutriment for the four establishments of mindfulness? It should be said, the three kinds of good conduct. The three kinds of good conduct, too, I say, have a nutriment. They are not without nutriment. And what is the nutriment for the three kinds of good conduct? It should be said, restraint of the sense faculties. Restraint of the sense faculties, too, I say, has a nutriment. It is not without nutriment. And what is the nutriment for restraint of the sense faculties? It should be said, mindfulness and clear comprehension. Mindfulness and clear comprehension, too, I say, have a nutriment. They are not without nutriment. And what is the nutriment for mindfulness and clear comprehension? It should be said, careful attention. Careful attention, too, I say, has a nutriment. It is not without nutriment. And what is the nutriment for careful attention? It should be said, faith. Faith, too, I say, has a nutriment. It is not without nutriment. And what is the nutriment for faith? It should be said, hearing the good Dhamma. Hearing the good Dhamma, too, I say, has a nutriment. It is not without nutriment. And what is the nutriment for hearing the good Dhamma? It should be said, associating with good persons. Thus, associating with good persons, becoming full, fills up hearing the good Dhamma. Hearing the good Dhamma, becoming full, fills up faith. Faith, becoming full, fills up careful attention. Careful attention, becoming full, fills up mindfulness and clear comprehension. Mindfulness and clear comprehension, becoming full, fill up restraint of the sense faculties. Restraint of the sense faculties, becoming full, fills up the three kinds of good conduct. The three kinds of good conduct, becoming full, fill up the four establishments of mindfulness. The four establishments of mindfulness, becoming full, fill up the seven factors of enlightenment. The seven factors of enlightenment, becoming full, fill up true knowledge and liberation. Thus there is nutriment for true knowledge and liberation, and in this way they become full. Just as when it is raining and the rain pours down in thick droplets on a mountaintop, the water flows down along the slope and fills the clefts, gullies, and creeks. These becoming full fill up the pools. These becoming full fill up the lakes. These becoming full fill up the streams. These becoming full fill up the rivers. And these becoming full fill up the great ocean. Thus there is nutriment for the great ocean, and in this way it becomes full. So too, associating with good persons, becoming full, fills up hearing the good Dhamma, and so on, through seven factors of enlightenment, becoming full, fill up true knowledge and liberation. Thus there is nutriment for true knowledge and liberation, and in this way they become full. Yeah.
I don't know what nutriment means.
A thing that sustains.
Oh, right.
Something that sustains, feeds. Mm. Actually, the Pali word is ahara, which literally means food. Aham. So in Thai, it's a very common word, because it has a very common meaning of food. Nutriment, something that nourishes and sustains. Yeah.
What are the three misconduct and three good things?
The three kinds of misconduct and body, speech, and mind.
And the good factors?
Well, good conduct of body, speech, and mind. Okay, I go on to another section that I've titled A Middle Path. Although the path follows a natural order of development, progress is by no means assured simply by taking the first step. One needs to monitor one's progress continually to make sure that one is not wandering off the path, and to make corrections when necessary. This is why the Buddha described the path as a middle way, and gave instructions for how to detect when one's practice is straying off to the extremes. Ajahn Chah once said that as a teacher, he simply observed people's practice like watching someone walking along a road. When they were going off in the wrong direction to the left, he called out to them, "Go right, go right." And when he saw someone going off on a tangent to the right, he would advise them, "Go left, go left." And Ajahn Chah sometimes had these very succinct ways of describing, because people would, you know, what's the essence of your teaching? How do you teach people? And Ajahn as well, just sort of trying to get people to keep on the path. Although we are fortunate when we can find a teacher like this to help us get started on the path, we can't rely on the teacher to monitor everything for us. We have to learn how to take on the role of monitor ourselves. In doing so, we are putting the principle of right view and our understanding of cause and effect into practice, thus gradually developing our faculty of discernment to the point where it can gain insights that are truly liberating. At the same time, we avoid the pitfalls that come from focusing too much on the length of time required to complete the path. In this way, we do not fail to recognize the importance of the steps we are taking in the immediate present. To monitor the quote-unquote middleness of our practice in the present requires that we never lose sight of the immediacy of the path, and it also provides us with encouragement in the practice as we come to see for ourselves that the results of the path are not all saved to the end. So I'm just sort of saying that the fact that we're practicing brings results. It's not setting goals for ourselves way off into the future somehow. It's just really paying attention to what we're cultivating in the present moment, and what we're cultivating is this possibility of clarity and peace and realization and understanding. So the middle of the middle way is not an easy splitting the difference between one's attachments and unskillful habits, then coming up with a comfortable compromise between the two. And in that I reference a quote that Ajahn Amaro used in the chapter, which I guess he hasn't got to yet, the unconditioned and non-locality. And in that, the middleness of the middle way is illustrated by a very short discourse that opens the Samyutta Nikaya, the collection, the connected discourses, is how it's usually translated, Samyutta Nikaya. It is the very first discourse in the first book of the Samyutta. I'll read it from this translation, which is Bhikkhu Bodhi's, and then I'll read Ajahn Jeff's translation, as it kind of illustrates coming at it from two different angles. A devata asked the Buddha, "How, dear sir, did you cross the flood of samsara, the flood of dukkha?" "By not halting, friend, and by not straining, I crossed the flood." "But how is it, dear sir, that by not halting and by not straining, you crossed the flood?" "When I came to a standstill, friend, then I sank. But when I struggled, then I got swept away. It is in this way, friend, that by not halting and by not straining, I crossed the flood." So the way, the path is, again, this sort of balance and middleness of a middle way is really important to be paying attention to. Ajahn Jeff translates, "I've heard that on one occasion the Blessed One was staying near Savatthi in Jeta's Grove in Natapindika's monastery. Then a certain devata in the far extreme of the night, her extreme radiance lighting up the entirety of Jeta's Grove, went to the Blessed One. On arrival, having bowed down to him, she stood to one side. As she was standing there, she said to him, 'Tell me, dear sir, how you crossed over the flood.' 'I crossed over the flood without pushing forward, without staying in place.' 'And how, dear sir, did you cross over the flood without pushing forward, without staying in place?' 'When I pushed forward, I was whirled about. When I stayed in place, I sank. And so I crossed over the flood without pushing forward, without staying in place.'" And then the devata has an exclamation because she's understood. "At long last I see a Brahman totally unbound, who without pushing forward, without staying in place, has crossed over the entanglements of the world." That is what the devata said. The teacher approved. Realizing that the teacher has approved of me, she bowed down to him, circumambulated, keeping him to her right, and then vanished right there. It's a beautiful little sutta that gives that illustration of the subtlety of the middle way, but also the immediacy of the middle way. It's not so far away that it's impossible to understand, and also that there's always certain amount of paradox. Like, to really understand the mind and to really liberate the mind, one can't be too literal. There's certain paradoxes that you have to be comfortable with holding in place together at the same time. That sense of not halting and not straining. It's okay, it's just, how do I hold that? How do I work with that? It becomes the mind as also is a message that Ajahn Sumedho got one time from Ajahn Chah. Ajahn Chah had come to England for a while. Normally he didn't write letters or even communicate very much at all. We were off in branch monasteries. We were not going to hear from Ajahn Chah, and even if you're off in England. So then it was a big deal for this monk. "Oh, Ajahn Chah wants me to write a letter to Ajahn Sumedho." And actually, he said, "Well, Ajahn Sumedho, you're not going to believe this, but Lumpa decided he wanted to write you a letter, so he asked me to take his dictation." And then what Ajahn Chah said, "Whenever you have feelings of love or hate for anything whatsoever, these will be your aids and partners in building Bharami. The Buddha Dhamma is not to be found in moving forwards, nor in moving backwards, nor in standing still. This Sumedho is your place of non-abiding. So it's a bit paradoxical, but it's also an incredibly direct and beautiful description of how practice has to be held. Because using whatever reactions and proliferations and difficulties that one's experiencing, using it for developing parami. And then, yes, of course, you do put forth effort. Yes, you do relax. Yes, you do abide in stillness. But those aren't the essential essence of what we're doing. It's in letting go and relinquishing. Or staying with the knowing, just being with the knowing. Any questions? Yeah?
What's non-abiding? Is that what you just described?
Non-abiding would be like just being with the knowing, just, and letting go, relinquishing, releasing.
From that addition, that's kind of like the addition to the Devata Sutta that really, you know, explains how not pushing forward.
Yeah, how not pushing forward.
It's not involved in that realm at all. It's
non-abiding, yeah. The middleness of the middle way is not an easy splitting the difference between one's attachments and unskillful habits, and then coming up with a comfortable compromise between the two. It entails a careful and circumspect understanding of the way the mind works and an ability to find the balance that truly cuts through our ignorance and craving. Sometimes this balance is just that, the balancing of two extremes on a continuum that can be harmful on either end, but helpful in the middle. This is especially true in cases where the continuum concerns extremes of behavior or motivation, as in the Buddha's first words to his first five disciples. So this is just an excerpt from the Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta. Bhikkhus, these two extremes should not be followed by one who has gone forth into homelessness. What two? The pursuit of sensual happiness and sensual pleasures, which is low, vulgar, the way of worldlings, ignoble, unbeneficial, and the pursuit of self-mortification, which is painful, ignoble, and unbeneficial. Without veering towards either of these extremes, the Tathagata has awakened to the middle way, which gives rise to vision, which gives rise to knowledge, which leads to peace, to direct knowledge, to enlightenment, to Nibbana. And what, bhikkhus, is that middle way awakened to by the Tathagata, which gives rise to vision, which gives rise to knowledge, which leads to peace, to direct knowledge, to enlightenment, to Nibbana? It is this noble eightfold path, that is, right view, right intention, right speech, right action, right livelihood, right effort, right mindfulness, right concentration. Sometimes the balance is internal and directly related to more subtle aspects of training the mind. And this is from Saṅyutta Nikāya, Saṅyutta 51, Sutta number 20. And how, bhikkhus, are the four bases for spiritual power developed and cultivated so that they are of great fruit and benefit? So four bases of spiritual power are in Pali what are called the Iddhipadas, also translated four bases of spiritual success, and they are a part of a larger group of teachings in the 37 factors of awakening, or 37 wings to awakening. Four bases for spiritual power, four bases for spiritual success, Iddhipada, four right efforts, four foundations of mindfulness, five faculties, five powers, and the seven factors awaken the Eightfold Path. So those are a collection of teachings that the Buddha gave. And so this is using these four bases for spiritual, for the Iddhipada, as a way of introducing aspects of training the mind or reflecting on the mind. Here, bhikkhus, a bhikkhu develops the basis for spiritual power. The four bases are in Pali, Chanda, Virya, Jitta, Vimansa. Chanda is literally translated as desire, and quite rightly translated as desire, but it's important to recognize that the word is chanda. So it's maybe desire more as motivation. Because sometimes when we say desire, then we think that we're normally translating tanha. Tanha is desire that is always associated with greed, hatred, and delusion, always ends up with suffering. Chanda is desire that is motivation. If it's used on its own, it has a positive connotation. So desire, motivation in a skillful way, a good way. But then it can also be qualified negatively, like in the first hindrance, gamachanda, sensual desire. But also it can be qualified in a positive sense again, kusala chanda, dhamma chanda, desire for the dhamma is really important motivator. Chanda, wirya, effort, jitta is mind, but what it's referring to is sort of like the stability of the mind, samadhi. And vimamsa is investigation, reflection. Vimamsa, just the word itself, has a connotation of reviewing. It's like reflecting and reviewing. So if one really reflects and reviews on experience, then what should come up is in chanda. So then it's a virtuous cycle. Okay, and here we go. We may as well start. A bhikkhu develops the basis for spiritual power that possesses concentration due to desire and volitional formations of striving, thinking. Thus my desire will be neither too slack nor too tense, and it will be neither constricted internally nor distracted externally. And he dwells perceiving after and before. As before, so after, as after, so before, so as below, so above, so below, as by day, so at night, as at night, so by day. Thus, with a mind that is open and unenveloped, he develops the mind imbued with luminosity. He develops the basis for spiritual power that possesses concentration due to energy. So like the concentration or the samadhi has a particular flavor that's informed by, this desire, motivation, motivating oneself, and turning attention to things that inspire the mind, or that's due to energy, due to mind, due to investigation. And it develops the mind imbued with luminosity. This is an important piece, bringing a brightness to the mind. And what bhikkhus is desire that is too slack? It is desire that is accompanied by lassitude, associated with lassitude. This is called desire that is too slack. And what bhikkhus is desire that is too tense? It is desire that is accompanied by restlessness, associated with restlessness. This is called desire that is too tense. And what bhikkhus is desire that is constricted internally? It is desire that is accompanied by sloth and torpor, associated with sloth and torpor. This is called desire that is constricted internally. And what bhikkhus is desire that is disturbed externally? It is desire that is repeatedly distracted externally, repeatedly disturbed on account of the five chords of sensual pleasure. So sight, sound, smells, taste, touch. This is called desire that is distracted externally. And how, bhikkhus, does a bhikkhu dwell perceiving after and before, so after, so before? Here, bhikkhus, the perception of after and before is well grasped by a bhikkhu, well attended to, well considered, well penetrated by wisdom. It is in this way, bhikkhus, that a bhikkhu dwells perceiving after and before, as before, so after, as after, so before. So it's a little bit enigmatic, as before, so after. And in the commentaries, it muddles it even more. Sometimes when you read something, you just have to be fairly literal. Okay, the Buddha's talking about space, the experience of space and time. Okay, this is what's before me, this is what's coming up in the future, this is what's after, or this is what I'm about to embark on, this is what I've done. It doesn't have to be esoteric. It can just be what it is. Quite straightforward. Or can be. And how, bhikkhus, does the bhikkhu dwell as below, so above, as above, so below? Here, bhikkhus, a bhikkhu reviews this very body upwards from the soles of the feet, downwards from the tips of the hairs, enclosed in skin, as full of many kinds of impurities. There are in this body head hairs, body hairs, nails, teeth, skin, flesh, sinews, bones, bone marrow, kidneys, heart, liver, pleura, spleen, lungs, intestines, mesentery, contents of the stomach, excrement, bile, phlegm, pus, blood, sweat, fat, tears, grease, saliva, snot, fluid of the joints, urine. It is in this way, bhikkhus, that a bhikkhu dwells as below, so above, as above, so below. And how, bhikkhus, does a bhikkhu dwell as by day, so at night, as at night, so by day? Here, bhikkhus, at night, a bhikkhu develops the basis for spiritual power that possesses concentration due to desire and volitional formations of striving by way of the same qualities, the same features, the same aspects as he develops that basis for spiritual power by day. Or else by day, he develops the basis for spiritual power that possesses concentration due to desire and volitional formations of striving by way of the same qualities, the same features, the same aspects as he develops that basis for spiritual power at night. It is in this way, bhikkhus, that a bhikkhu dwells as by day, so at night, as at night, so by day. And how, bhikkhus, does a bhikkhu with a mind that is open and unenveloped develop the mind imbued with luminosity? Here, bhikkhus, the perception of light is well grasped by a bhikkhu. The perception of day is well resolved upon. It is in this way, bhikkhus, that a bhikkhu with a mind that is open and unenveloped develops the mind imbued with luminosity. Similarly, for the other three bases of spiritual power, energy, mind, and investigation. When, bhikkhus, the four bases for spiritual power have been developed and cultivated in this way, a bhikkhu, by the destruction of the taints in this very life, enters and dwells in the taintless liberation of mind, liberation by wisdom, realizing it for himself with direct knowledge. Any questions? Yeah.
In the four biases, the gatis, I think it's negative.
Yeah, that's well spotted. Because it's biased by one's own particular preference. I want it to be like this. I desire it to be in this way. I'm motivated for it to be like this. One has to sort of see the content to be really sure. Okay. 7 o'clock, almost. 1 minute.